council. Commissioner Saltzman is sick, but the rest of us are here. Would you please call the roll, Sue?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman. Novick.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Well, good morning, everyone. First, we want to welcome a group of students from China. Ni hao. Welcome, welcome. They're here in Portland. They're having a great visit so far, and they're going to be here briefly with us this morning to see how city government works here. It's a cultural exchange to build friendships and understanding between the young leaders of China and the city of Portland. They've been doing some interesting things. They went on a scavenger hunt around the Metropolitan Learning Center yesterday. They're going to tour City Hall. They're going to go to the Girding Theater. So they're going to get a taste of Portland, and we'll have more friends in China. We have a wonderful relationship with our sister city in China, Suzhou, and my wife and I were there representing the city, and, of course, the council heard a report from our sister city association here recently. So welcome to Portland. Happy New Year. Nice to have you here. All right, let's begin with communications items, please, number 89.
Item 89, request of Dorinda Schubert to address council regarding development of Bridge Meadows in North Portland.
Dorinda, come on up, and I believe you have someone with you, so yes.
Yes, Mayor. I have Ms. Joy Corcoran with me, with your permission. May she
please, join? Come on up together.
We'll figure out the chairs.
Okay.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you for having us today. I am happy and delighted to provide you an update on how Bridge Meadows is going. In 2006, the Commission and the City of Portland made an investment with the championship of Commissioner Saltzman, and we're so sorry he's sick today. We wish him well, and the support of Commissioner Fish. And now we thank you for the visits, Commissioner Novick and Commissioner Fritz, that you've made to Bridge Meadows to see it, and we welcome you, Mayor, to see our beautiful community. Bridge Meadows, as you all know, is the first intergenerational community west of the Mississippi in our Pacific Northwest, and we are seeing amazing results. The children are now living with their adopted families in forever homes, and these three generations are coming together to create positive outcomes in housing, health, and education. We have children achieving their academic stride now, where they were behind academically because they were in foster care and struggling, and they now are no longer languishing in foster care because they are in their forever families. And not only do they have their forever families, but they are surrounded by many elders who serve as surrogate grandparents and mentors, assisting them with life and supporting the parents. So through this intergenerational community, we have seen a wonderful solution to some challenging issues for children, families, and elders. And we're excited to talk about that. The board of directors and leadership of Bridge Meadows have seen such incredible results that we are expanding our footprint to other metropolitan areas around Portland, as well as expanding the model to help youth aging out of foster care. We are also honored to be a part of the NEA Generations Project, serving as consultants, and have been asked in nationally to serve as consultants in Washington, D.C., and a project in Seattle. It's wonderful for us to bring people to Portland to learn about our city's investment in our most vulnerable citizens. But it's really best, while I could go on and talk about statistics and tell you how wonderful it is, it's really best to have one of our residents, Joy Corcoran. Joy has been living at Bridge Meadows for about over a year and a half now.
2 years.
2 years. And she is an artist and a storyteller and a very beloved member of our community.
Well, it's been wonderful to live at Bridge Meadows. I say it's the first time that I've had the most friends under 10 years old, which is kind of my intelligence level. What I've seen through being there for that long is little shy kids who have been in bad situations really flowering and coming out and learning how to play. And every time I do an art class, I'm amazed at the amount of creativity and intelligence these children have. But on the other end of it, the very shy violets of the elder population have also started really participating and having a meaningful life. And you will not find one elder feeling isolated or bored in our community. It's a wonderful thing.
Thank you for the investment.
Can I ask just one question?
Yes.
When we talk about the elders that are living there, what's the age range?
Our elders range in age from 55 to 90.
Wow.
I'm also proud to tell you that the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association now meets at Bridge Meadows.
Congratulations. Great.
Thank you. Thank you for the investment.
I just wanted to say that when I did my tour, what stuck with me from it was you said that a lot of people have found you from around the country, and you didn't know how, and you asked them, and they said that, well, they were watching the intentional, I might get this slightly wrong, but something like they were reading the intentional communities blogs, and you didn't know that there were such things as national intentional communities blogs.
That's correct, Commissioner Novick. Suddenly we were being found by we belong to a group called the Intentional Intergenerational Communities, and we had absolutely no idea that such existed.
Wow, I didn't either.
How did somebody find out about that?
Yeah.
Well, there is a movement about it, people no longer wanting to live isolated and wanting to live in community. And we see it here in Portland with our community as well as co-housing, and that the boomer generation no longer wants to live isolated. They're vibrant and they have much to give.
By the way, the mayor's working with his counterpart at the county right now to figure out who pays for what on shared services and things we both care about. But one of the most compelling arguments I've heard for continued investments in senior recreation and some of those programs is precisely this idea of isolation.
Yes.
That if you don't give older adults a place to go, build community, exercise, the alternative is to be alone at home, and that often has tragic consequences. So
yes,
the beauty of Bridge Meadows is it's not just a program set up to entertain people. We build meaningful relationships with children. And that gives us a sense of the future and keeps us active. You know, we got to chase them down. So it's so much more than just a program to help out seniors. It's a program about life.
Wow. Now, thank you so much for checking in with us and for creating this really valid new model. I'm glad the rest of the country is starting to discover what you're doing, but what you're doing is really important here. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. All right, that's great. Next one, please.
Request of Ross McKean, Oregon Children's Theater, to address council regarding the value of school field trips.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. When I realized I only had 3 minutes instead of 30, I dismissed the interpretive dance troupe and the choir that I was going to bring with me and tried to focus in on exactly what I wanted to talk about. And part of that is I know that you all understand the value of arts and arts education already, and you've demonstrated that support. So what I really wanted to do today, and I also know it's outside of the budget cycle, so I can't ask for like $100,000 to do more of what we're doing. But what I wanted to do was ask an extended invitation to you to come see one of our school field trip performances anytime during this season, and to help us welcome children to the theater. And in the past, when I've extended that invitation, hasn't really gotten anywhere. And I think partially I understand that's because you have ethics rules about accepting tickets to things, but I have a loophole, and that is that we routinely have volunteers help us greet students for school field trips, and as part of that volunteer opportunity, we invite people to stay for the show. We're just a couple of blocks from here at the Hatfield Hall, and our shows run just an hour, and you're also invited to just watch the beginning of a show sometime if you don't have the time. Just take 10 minutes to listen to the excitement of children as the lights dim. Unlike adult theater, when the lights go down and everyone gets quiet, in our theater, as the lights go down, the excitement level rises. So I'll send further information, but if you wanted to tell your schedulers to watch for that and see if you could do that, it's a great opportunity. And for me, what it does is it reinvigorates our commitment to issues like access. We have a vision of having every family and child in Portland have an opportunity to experience the performing arts. And I realize that there's so many obstacles and barriers that we need to break down for families to be able to come to the theater on a weekend, and not just financial, but cultural and geographic and transportation. But when I see the kids, especially Portland Public School kids, get off those buses, I see all the richness of our community. And for me, it's an opportunity to say to them, welcome. This is for all of you. This is an opportunity for all of you to come and see and experience the arts. We don't care where you're from. We don't care what your background is, what your financial status is. You are welcome here. And the joy on their faces, the single most common word we hear when they walk into the rotunda of the Hatfield Hall is awesome. And it's actually one of the few times that word is used appropriately. It's overused everywhere else. And I have kids say to me, like, do you live here? You're so lucky. And ask, is that a skyscraper? And they're just so excited to be there. And I would love for you to be able to see that and witness that, because it reinvigorates that sense of importance for these children. And with that, I thank you for your time.
There's one other loophole I think we should alert our honored friend to, which is that if we're invited to be in the production.
Oh, okay. So
Commissioner Fritz and I often get invited to be like trees or other shrubs.
We're doing a production of Charlotte's Web right now, so if you can climb a spider's web and weave words into things.
There's a lot of talent up there.
Right, okay. I'll talk to our artistic director about
that. A couple former drama kids up here.
Right.
So when I was a parent in Portland Public Schools, chaperoning field trips was a duty but not necessarily a pleasant one. Going to the theater was wonderful, and my daughter was a theater major in college, thanks to Argonne's Children's Theater and other such programs that helped provide those enrichment for her.
Well, part of the job of welcoming schools is reassuring the parents and the chaperones and the teachers that will help as much as we can. Have been on buses for a long time.
Yes, so the nice thing about theater is at least there's a spot for each child to sit. The zoo is the parents'
I'll bet.
Ultimate challenge. You kind of work up to that.
Right.
I just wanted to ask you to tell folks at home, how can they find out about Argonne's Children's Theater and these opportunities?
Our website is octc.org, and we have information about all of our programs, including our main stage productions and our community outreach programs and our Acting Academy program, which is in Northeast Portland on 20th and Sandy and offers classes for kids 4 to 18, and we do a whole lot of stuff in the community I haven't even talked about. But octc.org has all the information.
Thank you. And just one final question. Do you get funding for support from the arts tax?
We are waiting for that to arrive at our doorstep. when it trickles through and builds up enough, yes, we will.
But there's
be eligible. We get RAC funding.
You get RAC funding. You get
Oregon Arts Commission funding.
Oregon Arts Commission, and I believe you get from time to time Oregon Cultural Trust funding.
Yes, we've received money from Oregon Cultural Trust and also the Multnomah County Cultural Coalition, which is through the Cultural Trust, the county portion of that we've had funding. And I think it's largely because we do a broad range of arts education work. At the core of our mission, it's not ancillary to it. It's really what we do. We believe the value of arts in transforming lives. That's, we use theater as the tool that we know best and know the power of storytelling. So we get lots of great support.
By the way, I've told my son to knock off the awesome. He's 10. Oh. So he now uses the word epic instead of awesome.
Oh, epic, okay. That's good. That's literally the best thing I've heard all day. Right.
Let's hope that catches on.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good work, thanks.
And I'm going to extend an invitation to the Meadow people to do an intergenerational visit, too. I was inspired hearing them.
Bridge Meadow, yeah.
Bridge Meadow, and perfect. It just popped into my head like, oh, I'm going to go contact them right now.
That's a great connection. That's great. Thank you. Thanks. All right. A moment here for Sue to get.
Next is 91, request of Stanley Moy to address council regarding Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. And 92, request of Marilu Carrera, also speaking on the same topic. She would like to come up at the same time.
Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor Hales and fellow City Council members. My name is Stanley Moy with the Asian Pacific American Network Oregon, also known as APANO. We're a grassroots nonprofit with a focus on civic engagement, advocacy, and social justice. We've been really involved in our communities. Currently, we're working with Portland Public School to increase the dual language program with our Mandarin speaking and native speaking children, and also with our advocacy push towards the Vietnamese dual language programs. And also, I've been involved with APANO. I started out in 2012, back in the Get Out the Vote campaign as a bilingual organizing. I speak Chinese dialect with the Cantonese. And really, to engage our Chinese community and also the Asian Pacific Island community in voter registration and turnout. And for the 2000 election, with our efforts of over 30 volunteers and other diverse communities, we had a 6% increase in statewide voter registration and turnout. And from then, I transitioned to my work in the J District community, which is the Southeast 82nd Division MPI, and really organizing the community around, you know, business owners, residents, community stakeholders to really first build a steering committee, also known as a governing board, that includes the population there, represents the diversity, especially the API community. And from there, we decided to really create a visioning process to prevent gentrification and displacement. And I know we had many events, such as cleanup, partnering with the Harrison Park School, K-8, that really does community garden. And one of the benefits of this community garden is to really provide accessible, affordable food in our J District MPI. And our recent event, the Commissioner Novick attended, it was a J District holiday party with over 50 participants from the community to really recognize our accomplishment, our office, and our work thus far. I want to recognize that Apano is really engage our API community, especially in Portland, but not just Portland, but Beaverton. And one of our programs that we're trying to push for is our civic leadership engagement, where to get young Asian Americans, especially African such as myself, to be involved in public service and leadership to really push for it. And I want to thank you for your service to the city of Portland. And, you know, Apano, we're here all to serve our communities. And I look forward to hearing more from Apano and hearing from more from me. And I want to wish you all a happy Lunar New Year. And,
yes.
Hopefully I'll see Mayor Harris at the Saturday convention.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Year of the Horse. Happy New Year. Please, welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Mary Lou Carrera. I'm a Filipina and Japanese woman. I'm a nurse for a nonprofit in the Old Town neighborhood, and I also volunteer quite regularly with Apano. Thank you for the opportunity for to let me share my story of leadership with you today. As a registered nurse, I recognize the social and health disparities and their impact on our communities and wish to do more to improve the quality of life for communities of color. I first became involved with Apano because of my values around equity, diversity, and empowerment. So my first experience of leadership with Apano was as a volunteer for Apano's State of Cultural Competency Community Forum at Portland Community College Southeast last year. I was inspired by the focus on making an impact on policies and systems and ensuring that our unique voice as Asian and Pacific Islanders was fully engaged in the process. At that event, we had nearly 200 community members participating. Apano gave me an opportunity to gain leadership as a member of their health equity and reform team. Through this leadership development, I've worked on issues of equitable data collection and cultural competency for health professionals in Oregon. Apano established strong partnerships around these issues and crafted legislation that was signed into law by Governor Kitzhaber last year. I've also recently had the opportunity to co-create and co-facilitate a new series of gender justice workshops in alignment with our policy agenda to better serve the needs of women, LGBTQ, and families. And as a result, I've increased my level of community involvement and continue to outreach to the Asian and Pacific Islander community as an Apano volunteer and leader. Through this involvement and outreach, it is apparent to me that diversity in Portland is increasing, and it is very heartening to see that the priority on equity and inclusion to address this growth. Asian and Pacific Islanders currently represent approximately 9% of the Portland demographic, and we are fast growing. This suggests to me a need for greater civic leadership development and engagement opportunities for our communities. The City of Portland is positioned to provide this opportunity by expanding culturally specific programs to more equitably include Asian and Pacific Islanders. We need your support for programs that create opportunities for civic engagement and remove barriers for members of my community. I feel very fortunate to have received so much support from Apano to learn, grow, and engage. And your support for civic leadership development programs would allow this opportunity to many more APIs in our community. Thank you again for letting me share my story with you today.
Thank you. Great report. Thank you.
Questions? Just one question. For the benefit of people who may be watching, tell us who falls within the umbrella of Asian Pacific. So what are some of the different groups that are make up the 9%?
I work for communities like Chinese, Vietnamese, Thai, Korean, Burmese.
Filipino, Japanese, members of the Micronesian community.
And together, those communities are almost 10% of our city's population?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So that's a very hopeful sign.
Yeah.
It is a very hopeful sign.
But I really appreciate Apano's work and being a good partner with the city. And I'm particularly interested in this issue of leadership development, not just in culturally specific programs, but across the broad work of the city. So appreciate anything you can do with us to keep developing those new leaders and getting them engaged in the civic life of the city.
Absolutely. Yeah. We look forward to it.
Yeah. And Stanley, I need to express my appreciation for your willingness to serve on the Transportation Needs and Funding Advisory Committee.
Speaking of that kind of engagement.
Well, yes, and yesterday we heard that the Portland Utility Review Board needs engineers to participate, so if you know of any, and also some at-large positions. So if folks are interested in looking at water, sewer, and solid waste, which is much more interesting than it might appear, please invite them to go to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement's website. There's a page for boards and commissions, and we're always looking for new folks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you both. Thanks a lot. Okay, and we have one more communications item, number 93.
Request of Moses Ross to address council regarding sale of the Freeman Water Tower.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Moses Ross. I'm here in my role as a resident of our epic, if you will, city, and of a proud resident of the, and also chair of the Multnomah Neighborhood Association. And I'm here to speak about the Freeman Water Tower issue. The Freeman Water Tank property, located at 8711 Southwest 42nd, is a valuable feature of the Multnomah neighborhood. It's a wildlife habitat, a natural continuation of the Woods Memorial Park, which it abuts. It's worth preserving. So when local folks came to me as their MNA chair to inform me about its pending sale, by the city to developers, I was quite surprised. No one had been notified, not neighbors, not the association. Something was wrong here, and it was not right. So my neighbors did what our unique city charter allows neighborhood residents to do. They came to the Neighborhood Association and seeking representation and a voice. I helped them organize and fundraise, and brought them together as a coalition of concerned residents under the Multnomah Neighborhood Association umbrella. And here we are today. And in the true spirit of Portlanders, prepared to stand up in what we believe in. And we believe the city erred in how it handled this matter. Our efforts are endorsed by not only the Multnomah, but the Maplewood, the Ash Creek, and Crestwood neighborhood associations, Oregon Wild, the West Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District, and many other concerned citizens and groups, because this is a matter of broad public interest, not just an immediate neighbor concern. So we feel that the bigger question is, what is the best use of this public property? We believe that the answer is that it's a critically needed urban green space and a natural addition to the Woods Memorial Park natural area. So the decisions that are made about this strategically situated public property will have profound and lasting effects throughout Portland, both at the property itself and at similar sites in similar neighborhoods for years to come. And these decisions will affect the livability of our neighborhoods, the values of our properties, and the attitudes of those folks that wish to live and thrive in the city of Portland. That's why we're proceeding with our opposition to this proposed sale of the public property. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Can I just give an update?
Please, yeah, do.
Because I think Mr. Ross reflects the best of our neighborhood tradition of petitioning government, engaging people in a respectful way, and I appreciate that he's here. And by the way, we're also joined today by Steve Novick, who
is
one of the celebrity residents of your district.
I try not to bug him on a Saturday morning when he's at coffee. Starbucks.
Just so that you have an update, sir, as you know, the council has directed that the 0.6 of an acre property that has previously had a water tank on it be sold. And that's because the Water Bureau is not technically in the business of maintaining natural areas, and we have surplus properties. We've been directed to sell it. When the mayor gave me the assignment last year, the council had already voted to dispose of it, and I had inherited a binding contract to sell it. recently, it occurred to me that there was a moment to hit the pause button because I was threatened with two lawsuits that had incompatible outcomes. On the one hand, the party to whom we were going to sell it was threatening to sue me if I did not transfer the property, and the neighborhood was threatening to sue me if I did transfer the property. So I had a few options, including repatriating to another country, but I decided in lieu of that, I would try to do the adult thing, which is hit the pause button and suggest mediation. I'm very appreciative, Mayor, that the Neighborhood Association accepted that invitation, but it takes more than one party to mediate, and we were unsuccessful in getting the developer to come to the table without condition to have a mediation. So I directed the Bureau to put this on ice till we could find another resolution, and actually even thought about bringing a declaratory judgment action to have a court rule on it. Fortunately, the neighborhood moved first, and they have proceeded to court to ask a judge to give us guidance on the legal issue that's been framed. And on Friday, there's going to be a hearing on that, and we are going to consent to have this put on ice by the court until we get a ruling. And that will be over the objection of the developer. Now, I think this is democracy in action, and I'm in the middle of it. Remember, I'm the new guy. I inherited a contract, which the city attorney says is binding. And yet, the neighborhood has made some very compelling arguments. So, among other things, we have completely revamped our rules governing sale and disposition of properties owned by the Water Bureau, Bureau of Environmental Services. And that is a direct outgrowth of the issues that you and others have raised. And this will be the most robust, transparent processes in the city when we're finished. And I thank you for that. That's another example of democracy in action. But I just also want to be very clear that if it turns out that a court says I can't sell it to the developer, then I'm still under a mandate by the council to come back and do this over again. So this is 0.6 of an acre surrounded by acres and acres and acres of natural area. In fact, it's one of the most heavily parked areas of the city. And I frankly, if I didn't live in the Hollywood district, I might live in your neighborhood because it's beautiful. But if we hit the reset button and we go back to square one, I don't want anyone to be misled because I am under a council mandate to put up another for sale sign, and it may be that someone comes along and offers even more for the property. But I don't run natural areas. So I will be selling the property, and the opportunity, if a court so rules, will be for you and other people of goodwill to find a way to buy it if you want to maintain it as a natural area, and that's your prerogative. But I don't have that luxury. I am obliged by council direction to sell the surplus property because it no longer serves a function for the Water Bureau. So I kind of wish we could bring a constitution team in to watch this unfold because I think all the systems are working just right. But it starts with a neighborhood association that has played a very constructive role in all this, and I want to publicly thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that explanation because I think, and you've framed this very well, the community needs to understand that they are being heard, but we are also a place where the law rules. So we have to follow that law, and there are options within it, and we'll find out, as Commissioner Fish said, what the court says those options are. But I really appreciate your patient and articulate advocacy for your part of the city.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks. Other questions, comments? Excellent.
I have a comment that it's exemplary that Commissioner Fish went for the mediation first and then the lawsuit.
And I tell you, my experience, Commissioner Fritz, is that often the people who do best in these kinds of disputes are the lawyers and not necessarily the clients. And the beauty of mediation is the parties get to craft a solution which is theirs rather than have the court impose one.
Right.
So I believe mediation is always preferred.
Yes.
And I was actually delighted that the neighborhood accepted without condition.
I agree. Thank you very much to Walt Noah.
Commissioner, I need to take strong exception to your view that mediation is always preferred. As a former litigator, I think that in most cases you should fight everything out to the finish in the courtroom. I think this happens to be an exception.
From your celebrity resident of the Multnomah neighborhood.
You know, give him time. Give him time. He's only been on the council for a year.
I have no response but to say thank you.
Thanks, Moses.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Okay, let's let's get ready to move into the rest of the agenda. I don't believe there are any requests to withdraw items from the consent calendar. Is that right? So if not, then let's take a roll call on the consent calendar, and then we'll move to time certain.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, time certain number 94.
Declare certain city-owned property, real property, as surplus and authorize transfer of property to a qualified private developer to further the goals and objectives of the Portland Brownfield Program.
How appropriate. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. We have a wonderful presentation to share with you this morning about a brownfield in the St. John's neighborhood, a robust community process, and ultimately what we think is a happy ending. And we've got an all-star panel here to tell us the story this morning. Marvita Redding, who is the Pollution Prevention Services Group Manager. Marvita, we got to shorten that somehow. We'll just call you the manager.
Pollution Czarina.
She's the boss. From the Bureau of Environmental Services. Jen Bildersee, who coordinates the Portland Brownfield Program at BES. Michael Kohlhoff, who is on the St. John's Brownfield Steering Committee, and also in his free time is the city attorney for the city of Wilsonville. So we'll be asking you an opinion later on the Freeman Tank dispute, sir. And Kevin Cavanaugh, who has a company called Gorilla Development. I don't want to step on their toes in terms of the story. And as Commissioner Fritz knows, this has had some twists and turns getting here, because there was another development plan that was once envisioned that fell through. But I think the part that is exciting today is this presentation reminds us that we are in the cutting edge as a city in strategies for taking brownfields and turning them into productive use. And when we do this, we strengthen neighborhoods, we create jobs, we take underused or degraded areas and turn them into something else, and we know how to do it. And Mayor, this is particularly important and timely, because under Goal 9, we're going to have to figure out ways to probably turbocharge our program of brownfield remediation. And I think there's some important lessons in this process about how you do this with the community to get an outcome that's good for the city. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Marvita.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm pleased to be here this morning. Marvita Redding, Pollution Prevention Services Manager, Environmental Services. The Portland Brownfields program has been in existence since 1998. It was first housed in the Transportation Department, and then it moved to the Housing Bureau. And finally, it's been for most of its life with the Bureau of Environmental Services. This has been a really important synergy because of it fulfills the mission of BES to protect the quality of stormwater and groundwater and promote healthy ecosystems in our watersheds. As you know, contaminated sites do significantly affect the quality of stormwater and other waters in a community. Our program focus has been for providing resources for neighborhood brownfields with goals of sustainable development, water quality, neighborhood revitalization, and environmental justice. As was mentioned, we spend a good deal of our time with those small properties, those neighborhood properties where many things are unknown about them, and we often pass by them. They're fenced, they're abandoned, but they do have a very definite impact upon neighborhood livability. Our program provides technical assistance. Folks can call up and speak with Jen about brownfields issues to learn more about how to handle them, what some of the regulatory processes are. And also we provide financial assistance as well. This financial assistance is provided through EPA grants, which we have been very fortunate to receive over the pendency of our programs. And so we provide financial assistance for assessments of the brownfields in terms of finding out what the pollutants are there. We've helped people also acquire brownfield dollars for cleanup, and that's one of the things we'll be talking about this morning as well. One of the greatest barriers to brownfields, either large industrial areas or small sites in communities, is financial. It's always a financial issue, first of all, trying to find out what is there and understand that, and then once you do know it, how do you get it cleaned up? To date, this program has leveraged federal funds of approximately $4.7 million here in the Portland community, and we have been very fortunate to be able to do that. Our program is well recognized across the United States for innovation and work that we've done. We've spent time going to brownfield conventions and other activities and talking to people about some of the innovative things that have been done here in Portland, so we're very proud of that. Our projects have taken such properties as gas stations, battery facilities, and transformed them to transit-oriented housing, nonprofit facilities providing jobs, parks and restoration projects. We were very fortunate to be able to help with the initiative with Portland Parks for providing more parks in the community and helping people assess and know what was there. So we did a lot of that work in the community. First of all, I'd like to give you a little history for those who may not know the history of St. John's. We've been through it before, but I'll briefly go through it. The slide that you see in front of you shows the property located there on Lombard Street at the intersection of North Richmond. That property records indicate various uses as a residence, service station, vehicle repair shop. When we were doing the excavation on the property, we even found a lot of old bottles, like Rexall bottles and things of that nature, the tinted ones, where people probably did some kind of a drugstore activity there as well. And some of them actually are rather collectible when we dug them up. This property was purchased by the Portland Development Commission in the 1970s and went into their inventory. So this property remained vacant for over 30 years. So it's the only vacant piece of property in the heart of St. John's. There are vacant buildings, but there's no vacant land right there. This property also, as you can see from looking at the map there, also backs up to the Portland Parks facility there. And at so many times, because that area was sort of cut off from that facility, it was an area which could harbor criminal activity and other things that made that particular location undesirable. The PDC came to the Portland Brownfield Program and asked for assistance with getting this property cleaned up. So in 2004, we applied for and received a grant from the Environmental Protection Agency for that cleanup. That was very important to get something going there. We had some assessment of the property, so we were able to do that. The slide that you see before you is where the tanks were being taken out of the ground. There were 7 tanks that we had to decommission there. It's always very interesting. Those of you who are familiar with brownfield programs know that usually once you start, there's always something new to discover. And there was a discovery of tanks underneath the sidewalk in that particular area that made it even a little bit more complex. We, in that cleanup, it included the decommissioning of those underground storage tanks and excavation of over 800 tons of contaminated soil. So there was petroleum, lead, and PCB soils that were found, and so those soils were disposed of. After, as we were working on the cleanup, we began talking with the Portland Development Commission about how the property would be used. It was currently in their residential inventory, and that area that's around there is a zoned commercial. So they'd held it for all this period of time. We began talking about looking for some innovative ways of taking a brownfield from the cleanup to fruition while working with a neighborhood to realize neighborhood dreams. And that's how this project began. It began now 10 years ago. In 2004 was when our initial involvement was with the project. And so here we are now 10 years later. It's been a long time to get here. As the commissioner mentioned earlier, we had a selection of a contractor, and some of you were aware of that and were here at that time. That particular arrangement did not work out for financing in the times and so forth, and we really want to thank them for the effort that they did on that project. But at that point, then, we had the opportunity to be able to select another contractor. Activities that we did in working with the community were significant and very involved with that community and time-consuming for the residents of St. John's as well as the advisory committee. Jen is going to talk about the community involvement aspects of our work here and also followed by Michael Kohlhoff, member of the advisory committee, and then we will hear from Kevin Kavanaugh about the project itself.
Thank you. So I'll pick up the story the day after this slide, which seems to have disappeared. Once the property had the soil removed and the tanks removed, it was a clean site. There were a lot of questions from the neighbors. This is a very visible site right in the heart of St. John. So we organized a community meeting, which became a series of three community meetings. Today, St. John's is a very well-used Facebook page, but at this time, it did not exist. So there was a lot of door-to-door knocking. We put posters up in all of the neighboring businesses and spoke to the business owners in the community to get the word out that there would be these community meetings. They were very well attended. We had three meetings that each had between 80 and 100 participants held in St. John's in the evenings. And what we heard very clearly was that the neighbors who had lived with this vacant, contaminated site for decades wanted a say in what was going to happen there next. There wasn't a consensus of exactly what that should look like, but there were certain strong themes that we heard over and over. In particular, the desire for a vibrant street front presence, some commercial business on that site that interacted with the street front. Many of the businesses on that site are just walls to the street, and there was a repeated interest in something that would interact with the street, a place where people could gather, something that offered services and amenities to the residents of St. John's, something that would be fun and a destination for people, that would bring some life to this very important place in the heart of the community. The result of these meetings was the formation of the steering committee, a 10-person steering committee. This was assembled with the assistance of BES and the mayor's office at the time. These are the 10 initial members, and as you can see, the ones in blue with the asterisk are the six who still today, 7 years in, are an active part of this process. This was not a committee that met occasionally to be informed of what was happening. This was a working steering committee that made the decisions about what was going to happen. And what that process involved was extensive research that Mike's going to talk a little bit more about what that looked like from inside the steering committee. And the conclusion was the request for qualifications for a developer for a particular type of development that reflected the desires that were expressed by the community. The steering committee's commitment to this cannot be overstated. They literally spent years, hours of personal time shaping this process, and it really is a testament to how involved these neighbors are and how committed they were to representing the interests of the community. As Marvita mentioned, there was, and as some of you remember, there was a proposal that came before the council in 2010. There was a two-year memorandum of understanding with that initial project, and at the conclusion of that process, the development team withdrew their interest in the project because they weren't able to assemble the financing and the tenants for their proposal. At that point, the steering committee reconvened, and they had a discussion about how in the initial scoring that the top two proposals had scored very closely, and there had been internal discussion about which was the right proposal to go with. And so we circled back around with the other development proposal, which was the two-thirds project. And with sort of unanimous support of the steering committee, we circled back around with Kevin Kavanaugh, who submitted that two-thirds project proposal. And he was still interested in moving forward with the design. He met with the steering committee last year and discussed what that would look like in 2013 and 2014. And it really was very similar to the project that initially was so well received. So that's the point we've been moving forward with now. These are some illustrations of that project that Kevin will speak to after Mike has had a chance to talk about the steering committee process. But overall, what I'd really like to say is this is a very rare opportunity for a community who has endured the presence of a site that was a real neighborhood liability to have a meaningful say. As Commissioner Fish said, it was a robust community process that resulted in a meaningful say in what that community was going to look like in the future, transforming an unfortunate property with a negative history into a real asset for the community. So I'll turn it over to Michael.
Thank you, Jen. Mayor and commissioners, I'm Mike Koloff, and I'm very happy to be here representing the St. John's Brownfield Advisory Committee. On behalf of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to address you today. We'd also like to thank staff for their help, assistance, and keeping their sense of humor with our many questions that we posed. The committee is very pleased to support this development. It occupies a strategic place in the hub of St. John's commercial activities. Kevin Cavanaugh and his team will bring energy and creativity to the location and to the St. John's hub that it occupies. We found the development concept of the two-thirds project to be of human scale, to incorporate the vitality and vision in the St. John's plan, and to be responsive to the community goals embodied in the RFP. The committee is very pleased that after 6.5 years from its formation, its work is coming to fruition, although we were there in 2010, but for the Great Recession. James Hayes, a member of the committee and owner of Proper Eats Restaurant in the neighborhood, gave me the following advice for my presentation today. Quote, "Let them know how looking forward we all are to this being such a great development for St. John's, one that adheres to the RFP and provides this neighborhood with some needed amenities. We worked hard for that $1. So what did we do? We asked questions, we talked with and listened to neighbors, business owners, property owners, developers, community activists, neighborhood groups, business groups, experts in housing needs, green buildings and leads, park and recreation and tennis facilities management, and financing of developments. And we deliberated, we argued, and we laughed. With staff's help, we conducted a very informative community survey that guided us. We reviewed the St. John's plan against development concepts. We reviewed the site's history and that of the adjoining tennis facilities. We looked at property values and brownfield redevelopment activities. We conducted 4 well-attended community meetings, visited various infill developments within the city, worked on 2 different RFPs, reviewed the proposals, and conducted interviews with finalists. By my count, we met approximately 20 times, including in the lounge of the tennis center, and in meeting rooms of the wastewater facility, and rooms at the community center, and even at the writing dojo of one of the committee members. We also worked with staff to keep the site maintained and to have summer movies there. And by my account, there were 6 annual St. John's parades in the interim, which also gave me the opportunity to watch the parade from the home of one of our members, who incredibly keeps their own honeybee hives and is rumored to make a wonderful mead drink from the honey.
Only rumored.
Only rumored. So we bonded as well. Again, thank you from all of us on the committee for the opportunities to serve the St. John's community and to help bring this development to life. We hope to see you all at the groundbreaking and, of course, at the St. John's Parade, May 10th, 2014. Thank you.
Can we get that last slide up there? Hi, thanks for your time.
Push the button on there you go.
So real quickly, the two-thirds project.
Introduce yourself.
I'm sorry, I'm Kevin Cavanaugh. I'm the developer on the site, hopeful developer on the site. So the two-thirds project I coined because for 3 reasons. A, there are a lot of greedy buildings going on in Portland right now, and I want to create a site that's dense in activity, not necessarily in square footage. So the project covers two-thirds of the footprint of the site. There are 6 private courtyards, and there's 2 public alleyways to get any resident back to the Racquet Center from Lombard through the property. It also will only use two-thirds of the baseline energy that code requires. So it'll be very green. And lastly, and I think most importantly for this site, it is the missing tooth in the smile of the St. John's Village. It will be activated two-thirds of every 24-hour cycle. So from 7 in the morning through 11 o'clock in the evening, there will be 3 restaurants, an eye care center, a wellness center, an office, and 6 small loft cottages. So it'll be very activated. And that's, I think, I'm open to questions if you have any, but that's the gist of it.
Thank you, Kevin.
Very much.
I've got, I guess, a question and a request. That is, this is more of a rhetorical question. Frankly, I think your presentation has answered it, but the city, through one or agency or another, owns a great deal of property around the city. Fortunately, most of those sites aren't brownfields, so that might not require some of the technical effort that's gone into this project. But some might argue that we should simply put up a sign and sell those to the highest bidder strictly on a cash basis, as opposed to negotiating a particular set of outcomes. I think you've essentially done it by the way you've presented this, but any particular thoughts about how to respond to that potential criticism of this project, as valid as it is?
In particular, with a brownfield site, the community has really endured something. A brownfield site presents unique challenges that often lead to vacancy for years and typically, as is the case in this site, decades. So what we can do to support the very enthusiastic voice of the community in expressing what they want to see come of a site like that, I think that's what distinguishes this site from all of the other properties.
Additionally, the development agreement requires things of the developer that we would normally not ever do. We would just say, here, take it and go do what you'd like. The developer has agreed to many terms and conditions as a result of the work of Mr. Kohlhoff and the advisory committee. And so there is a different type of commitment than you normally would get in a development. And that, you know, follows what Jen has just said. It is a unique situation, and during our process, when we were having our meetings, from time to time, someone would say, why don't you just sell it? We need a parking lot. And most people almost unanimously would shout that down, but there were differing opinions during that point in time. But again, we were trying to steer toward the interest of the community, using that as our North Star, if you will, in thinking about how a brownfield project can bring something to fruition. It's a demonstration project, and in that way, we probably will never do this again because we do not keep properties in our inventory for that. So it is a very unique set of circumstances that brings us here today.
Let me follow up on the mayor's excellent question. So it's been vacant for 30 years. So we often, in the urban renewal context, we say, but for some intervention, it would remain vacant. And it wasn't just vacant property, it was a polluting property. It was a property adversely impacting the environmental health of the area. You've negotiated some benefits that go beyond just putting things on the tax rolls, which a lot of this property will go on the tax rolls, but you've negotiated other community benefits, which has value. But I think to close the loop on the mayor's question, what was the price that BES paid for this dirt?
We paid nothing for it. We just agreed with the PDC for the transfer of it, so there were no BES dollars spent on it. Our time was spent on working on it, which mostly was after hours and evenings in working through this process.
And the bulk of the money spent on this brownfield remediation was the EPA grant?
Exactly. The EPA grant, the $200,000, covered all of that remediation costs.
If I might comment, Commissioner Fish, I think this illustrates how the Bureau of Environmental Services is not just a sewer and stormwater bureau. It's a public agency, and that you have a responsibility, just like the rest of the bureaus do, to the public and to the long-term public good. And so given that it was purchased by PDC in 74, did you say?
In the 70s, yes.
The rules must have been different then, or something. I'd be interested in that history, because currently the Portland Development Commission only buys properties within urban renewal districts.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that at the time. Yes.
And it wasn't that, mm-hmm. and isn't now, right?
It might be.
It might have extended the lines.
Did we?
At the time when the property transferred to BES.
It wasn't.
It was not. No.
At the time it was not.
At that time.
Right. So this illustrates how we look at a property that did not cost the Bureau of Environmental Services anything. How do we then create the kinds of development that we want to see? As the commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Development Services, I get emails every day about how dare you allow this in my neighborhood, and my answer is because the rules allow it. And if you want to change the rules, participate in the comprehensive plan process, because then the rules would be different. So I commend you for what you've done. I also need to note that there's one of the parcels is owned and managed by the Portland Parks and Recreation. So technically, I think I should have co-sponsored this so that if a future neighborhood association comes in and says you shouldn't have sold this property, it should be something else. I want to make it very clear. I very much support this project, and I think that you've done an exemplary job of the public involvement of it. The Portland Parks and Recreation parcel was acquired through foreclosure in the Multnomah County's property tax program, that when a property is foreclosed upon, other government agencies get first opportunity to take it. Portland Parks and Recreation, with it being next to the Rackett Center, thought we might need it for something in the future, so we'll take ownership of it. My staff and I looked at it when you declared it, when this was coming several months ago, and said, and looked at, could there possibly be a parks use for this sliver? That
like 3.5 feet wide.
Well, and I think what you've done is provided exactly what we would want, public walkways through an active space to allow people to get from the street to the Rackett Center. Mm-hmm. So it seems like this is one of the proverbial win-win-wins.
On top of that, your agency did a great job of negotiating. I'm building a play structure on the Rackett Center's property in exchange for that land.
Not know that. Thank you. That's even better. So, this is an example of when we set aside different bureaus or recognize that there are different bureaus with different interests. There's a community with business interests, with residents' interests, and you do a good public process to bring people together, get to what we hope will be a really good outcome. So now that the challenge is on you, Mr. Kavanaugh, to deliver on the promise. I think we were hopeful in 2010 that project was going to move forward. Development services will certainly be as helpful as they always are to make sure that you know the permit process and such. And I'm hope, absent testimony to the contrary as to why we should not do this, I'm very hopeful that this will work out. Thank you for your work, all of you.
I'd just like to also say that staff correctly caught the community's heart in this, in the sense that we did debate the dollars and cents issue with the committee. Within the committee, we also brought it out at the community meetings. So I think everyone recognizes that there's obviously a place where dollars and cents are needed, but sometimes greater goals are achieved through this type of a construct. So we really appreciate what's being offered here for the St. John's community.
Great. Other questions for the panel?
In conclusion, I'd like to express thanks to everyone in St. John's who saw this project through, also to the advisory committee and many of the other folks in the community who have followed this for quite some time. One of our facilities that I manage is in this neighborhood, and so I spend quite a bit of time in the St. John's neighborhood, and people are constantly asking me, when is it going to be there? What's happening? And we have a number of our employees there that live in that neighborhood, so there's a great deal of community excitement about what's coming. And so hopefully we've been able to share that with you today. I'd also like to, on the record, thank Clark Henry, who was Jen Bildersee's predecessor and began this process, and he has moved on and moved to North Carolina, but with his vision as well, we got going on this project. Thank you.
Great. Is there anyone signed up to testify?
Yes, we have one person, Mr. Lightning.
Okay, let me thank the panel then and let him come up and testify.
This will go to a second reading, so we won't have a chance to make extended comments today, but thank you for an outstanding presentation.
Come on up. Morning.
Good morning. My company is Portland Lightning, a watchdog think tank. And my name is Lightning. As stated by the speaker, it's a clean site. You have a proposed agreement of disposition to a developer for subject property at 8735 North Lombard Street. As stated, purchase price for the property is to be $1. That's a great buy, $1. Has there been a current appraisal on the property due to the fact the property has been given a no further action letter by DEQ? If the answer is no, is the $1 value being determined because of the brownfield per se cloud over the property designation? In the current proposed disposition agreement, the title company stated they are prepared to issue to developer the owner's title policy selected by developer under section 2.6 covering the property in an amount not less than $400,000. Now that would lead you to believe a possible value of $400,000